Another date with the rate.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's the Morning Open, a look at the broader economy as we start the trading day just about 20 minutes in. The Fed ponders again. In Washington, the summer lobbying season's begun, and one rodent gets withdrawn. First, where's Wall Street? Down at the moment, the S&P down about 0.3%. Same for the NASDAQ and the Dow. The Dow trading at 93.41 right now. European markets mostly lower right now, all under 1%. And Asian shares closed higher today, with the Hang Seng closing up by 2.5%. This week, the economy focuses again on the question of when the Federal Reserve will raise its key interest rate. The Fed starts its latest two-day meeting tomorrow. The expectation is Chairman Ben Bernanke and his colleagues will keep the rate right where it is, near zero. So we're joined now by Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research. He joins us live from New York. Morning, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So the one difference heading into tomorrow's big Fed meeting is that we've seen some evidence of a recovery lately. What is that, do you think, due to the expectations of a rate increase?
Well, I think certainly it's given people on Wall Street the idea that the Fed will likely raise rates possibly by the end of this year. I think, however, that because the commercial real estate environment still looks fairly weak and that we probably will still end up seeing the unemployment rate breach the 10% level, I think the Fed is going to sit on its hands and wait to see if that news will bear out before it decides to slow things down.
So they're still juggling this inflation-deflation thing, right?
They certainly are. We're looking at the consumer price index, the producer price index, which will be coming out next week, and both of those numbers are likely to show very low increases in inflationary expectations. So I don't think that the Fed believes that it has to rush into anything.
Well, whatever happens to the rate, Sam, we know bank overdraft fees are on the rise, and the Financial Times reports this morning it's going to be a record year for those. I want to bring in reporter Tamara Keith, who's been watching this story for us. And Tamara, we're reading U.S. banks will bring in $38 billion in fees this year. How?
It's a lot of money, and the Financial Times reports that basically the recession has driven banks to focus more on fees to boost their balance sheets. And the banks, the paper says that overdraft fees collected this year will be nearly double those that were collected in the year 2000. As you probably know, overdraft protection is a free service provided by the banks to help people avoid bouncing checks. But more and more, they've been focusing on debit card transactions, much smaller purchases. So say you take your debit card, you go to buy a pack of gum, your checking account is totally empty, and instead of getting declined, the bank will just cover the gum and then charge you an overdraft fee of maybe $25 or $35. And advocates say that these fees are expensive loans people weren't asking for.
That's an expensive pack of gum.
Indeed.
Sam Stovall, we've been hearing about all sorts of nickel and diming throughout the recession. The Federal Reserve says it's working on reining this kind of thing in. But, I mean, what can it really do about these fees?
Well, it can do something if they believe that the fees are clandestine, if they are arbitrary, et cetera. But if it's really just as an opportunity to make some money in otherwise difficult times, I don't really think they can do much about it at all. I mean, case in point being the airline industry, nobody's really stepping in to stop them from charging for checked bags.
And Tamara, you checked in with the Fed this morning. What are they saying to you?
Yeah, they had a preliminary rule that they released back in December. They're planning to finalize something later this year. What they want to do is make it so that consumers have the option to opt in or opt out so that they can choose whether they want that gum or not.
Or whether they want to pay $30 for it.
Exactly. Yeah. And consumer advocates say that, you know, this isn't a complicated thing. Just banks start declining these ATM purchases for tiny things if they aren't covered by the funds in the account.
Well, I want to thank you both. Sam Stovall joining us for live from New York. Sam, thank you.
You're welcome, Steve.
And Tamara, Keith, thank you for joining us from Washington this morning.
Thanks.
All right. Dish Network says profits in the second quarter tumbled 81%. The satellite provider blames rising expenses and TiVo litigation costs. Sales at McDonald's American restaurants open at least a year and a month rose more than 2.5% in July. You know what helped? The new McCafe espresso-based drinks. Seems coffee is the new burger. And we've been hearing economic experts going back and forth about when the U.S., the worst U.S. recession since the 30s will end. And one group of private economists says the third quarter, as in right now. The Blue Chip Economic Indicators survey released today shows nearly 9 in 10 of the respondents believe when all is said and done, other experts down the road will look back and say the downturn ended this quarter. You're listening to The Morning Report for Monday, August 10th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. You know, the Federal Reserve begins 2 days of meetings tomorrow, like we talked about. It's expected to hold those interest rates right where they are. The Bank of England held its rate steady last week, but made a surprise move to pour billions more into the British economy. And today, the UK paper, The Telegraph, says the BOE is fearing deflation and prolonged stagnation. From London, Christopher Worth has more.
The UK has been abuzz with talk of green shoots lately. British manufacturing numbers are up, and consumer spending has been better than expected. That's why it came as such a big surprise when the bank decided last week to increase its program to buy up nearly $300 billion in government and corporate bonds in order to increase the country's money supply. Conventional wisdom says adding more money to the economy risks inflation. But Vicky Redwood of Capital Economics says with such a lack of economic growth, prices actually risk going down, and that any recovery would be wiped out if deflation took hold.
So we've still got a significant risk of a W-shaped recession or a double-dip recession where the economy starts to grow again for a quarter or two, but then loses some of its momentum and slips back into recession further ahead.
Redwood says the same forces of spare capacity, where companies lower prices to compete for what little demand is out there, threatens pushing the U.S. into a similar deflationary spiral. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
You may not have heard about it, but you could before long. Alibaba.com is the corporate giant of e-commerce in China. And today it begins a big marketing push right here in the United States. From Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
Alibaba.com is China's top business-to-business website. More than 30 million people in the country use it to shop wholesale for everything from steel pipes to beaded belts to kidney beans. Now the company is targeting American entrepreneurs who also need suppliers. Here's Mamie, an oven mitt designer featured in a company commercial for that new audience.
Everything that I'd had in mind but had no idea if I'd be able to find, I found on Alibaba.com. Once I found it, it was like lightning struck. Everything just started to fall into place.
It's unclear if Mamie, the chipper businesswoman, is a real person. Alibaba is forking out $30 million for overseas marketing and another $200 million for global acquisitions in related sectors like smartphones and e-payment systems. Company founder Jack Ma thinks a lot of Chinese companies like his are on the verge of going global. He spoke recently at the Asia Society in New York.
Next few years, what I suggest is American people pay more attention to the China growth, the China model.
For Alibaba, he hopes that attention will come from new ads in U.S. business magazines and TV commercials on network and cable channels. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
President Obama is meeting with his Canadian and Mexican counterparts in Guadalajara today. It's the annual meeting of North American leaders. And high on the agenda will be protectionism. Our neighbors to the north and south apparently worried that the U.S. has been violating the spirit of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Alisa Roth explains.
When Congress passed the economic stimulus package in February, there was one stipulation for all those projects. They have to use U.S.-based companies and American-made goods. Obama made free trade partners exempt from that rule, but state and local governments are still allowed to insist on goods made in the U.S. Canada and Mexico say that's hurting business and that it goes against the idea of NAFTA. Gary Huffbauer studies trade at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, and he says it's not really about lost business.
The numbers aren't overwhelming, certainly compared to the amount of trade between our countries. However, the symbol to those countries is very strong.
Huffbauer says the Buy American regulation makes it harder for the stimulus money to do what it's supposed to do.
There are cases where, say, laying some water pipe is held up because they can't get the supplies here in the United States.
Meanwhile, some Canadians are threatening to retaliate by boycotting U.S.-made products. I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
you're one of those people who hits the mute button the second some obnoxious commercial comes on television, you'll be happy to know that Congress has gotten involved, and ultra-loud advertising could be on its way out. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Everyone's heading to Arby's for the official $5 combo of summer.
Where's the remote control? That's better. Marketing professor Sam Craig at NYU says advertisers spend in the hundreds of thousands of dollars for a 30-second spot.
So if they can crank up the volume a little bit to get over the clutter and the din that's in the household, they're likely to do it.
They can't do it too much. Under the current rules, a commercial can't be louder than the loudest part of the program you're watching. But if your Charlie's Angels rerun happens to cut away during a tender love scene,
order in the next 3 minutes and you can have
that proactive ad can sound especially jarring. Advertisers also use an audio trick called compression to make the sound jump out of your TV set. A bill under consideration in the House would force them to rein it in. David Donovan is president of the Association for Maximum Service Television. He says the industry is working on its own solution.
Our bottom economic line essentially is advertising. And if people start saying, I'm annoyed and they're turning this off, we know we have to fix this.
Donovan says the fix involves using digital TV technology to better match the volume of commercials to the programming. He says broadcasters will vote on a new standard this fall. I wanted to know how that squared with one of the legends of the loud commercial.
Beat the heat! Beat the heat with a fan or air conditioner from Crazy Eddie!
I tracked down Jerry Carroll. He was pitchman for the New York area electronics chain Crazy Eddie in the 1970s and 80s. Carroll says Crazy Eddie believed in volume, in both senses of the word.
You would have a night between midnight and 6 where, I mean, he was on every station. He was on 2-3 times an hour. I mean, I don't blame people. I'd get sick of me, too.
Carroll says there's a reason he kept shouting all those years.
The lines into the store were always long, and it really did work.
Even with new rules, pitchmen like Carroll will likely keep shouting. They'll just have to do it more quietly. Carroll says if an ad annoys you, do what he does. Change the channel. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
So the Senate's on summer recess, right? And lawmakers may have postponed any action on climate legislation until they return. But sure, that doesn't mean the lobbyists are taking a break. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
The House climate bill passed in June would require all new homes be 30% more efficient by 2010. But the National Association of Home Builders, Bill Kilmer, says that's too far, too fast. He says the bill's tougher efficiency standards would stall any housing rebound.
If you take this action, it really will be a shock to the system, and the concern is that you could stall that rebound if you're adding cost.
Kilmer says those measures would cost about $4,000 extra, but efficiency advocates point out that once those costs are rolled into a 30-year mortgage, the energy savings far outweigh the higher payments. William Fay directs the Building Energy Efficient Codes Network.
This is money in the wallet of the homeowner.
According to the U.S. Department of Energy, homeowners would net more than $500 a year in energy savings, despite the home's higher sticker price. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Finally, how about this for an expensive transaction? A gas station employee in Oregon got a big surprise when she opened the ATM there last week to check on it. She found money, all right, cash that was used as a nest for a mouse that had squeezed into the machine. The rodent completely shredded a couple of 20s and damaged more than a dozen others to make a bed. Employees at the Chevron station didn't know how the mouse got inside. They did let it go free so it could look for other vending options. Or maybe there are some Cheez-Its at another gas station down the road. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.